Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. As this year comes to an end, we thought we'd put together some of our very favorite segments from the past year. It was our first year for the 21st. Let's take a listen to one now. You're listening to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. That's a little bit of He's My Star, one of the most popular songs from the indie band, The Poster Children. They toured the country all through the 90s and early 2000s, and they've reunited for the Pygmalion Festival. They're also back to celebrate the 25th anniversary of their album, Daisy Chain Reaction. Two of their members, Rick Valentin and Rose Marshak, are here with me in studio. Welcome to the 21st, Rose. Rick, thanks for being with us.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
So when Poster Children played on and off throughout the 2000s, first of all, is it fair to call this a reunion for you guys?
Yeah, I know. I had thoughts about it. We always said, oh, we're never going to break up. We're never going to have a reunion. But
We haven't played together for how many years? Eight, 9 years.
Yeah.
So okay. It's definitely a reunion, but we didn't break up either.
Okay. And so you guys started actually on the campus at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. At the time, you guys had a label deal. You were touring all around the country. When did you decide to stop touring? How did that kind of, as you said, you guys never broke apart.
Now, wait a minute. Yeah. Now, we started in Allen Hall, and we were playing, we played for like 4 or 5 years
before we had a big record deal. But we started out on indie labels and then moved to major labels. But what made us stop? I mean, it's a little unfair, but I think we had kids. And even though we're very DIY and very organized, kind of on top of it people, I think that was the big thing was like, and some bands we knew took their kids on the road. But for us, it was just like, I think we've been doing this for a while. We can stay at home for a while, take care of the kids, pursue other things. And that's kind of what we did.
What's it like to be back here, to be back on campus?
I come back here all the time.
Do you?
I'm here
okay.
at least a couple of times a week. Our children take violin lessons here.
Ah, okay.
At the conservatory, and I'm here all the time for capoeira. So I'm here all the time. It's always interesting to come back to campus and see the changes.
Yeah, because we lived here for, 25 or 30 years?
We lived here for, about 30 years. And I feel like this is home, and it's weird to be away sometimes.
But when we first came here, there were only pizza places.
We
recorded our first tape when the first Mexican food place showed up in town. I remember
that's
that.
That's right.
How do you think the music scene has changed since then, too?
I tell people now that I have a perspective of 30 years.
That's why I'm asking.
Now you should listen to him.
And so, so when we were kind of really active, it seemed like this was the moment and great things were happening. There were a lot of great bands in town and they were touring around and everything like that. But things kind of seemed to take a dip. And then they came up
it
again.
It ebbs and flows.
But we
were really proud. I always tell my music business students this. We would go around the United States and go in Europe and people would interview us and they'd say, what's the Champaign scene like? And we'd say, oh my goodness, it's incredible. You should hear these amazing bands. There's Hum, there's Braid, there's The Digits, there's Lonely Trailers, incredible bands. It's the most fantastic place. And, you know, when other people, Champaign scene is fantastic. So then when other Champaign bands would go through those towns, people would go, oh, I heard your scene is fantastic. And it's great.
You guys did a good job promoting the
scene here has always been really supportive.
But that's the thing is, so we've been in a couple of like talks and things like that with people from the scene in the 60s and the 70s, and you start realizing, wow, the same kind of things were happening here a long time ago also, like before our time and then after our time, right? And so you realize there's something special about Champaign.
What is the culture? Do you think it's because it's a college town, there's always going to be, you have kind of a group of a population of students who maybe there's so many students, there's always going to be some who always are looking for live music or indie music or that scene. Is that part of it?
Yeah, I definitely think that's it. And you see that in a lot of college towns. But then the question is always, well, why didn't this town become Athens, Georgia, for instance? And it's because, well...
Or Seattle, right?
And so Athens, Georgia had the B-52s and REM, right? And so those bands got so huge that I think maybe it And people from Athens, Georgia would kill me for saying this.
Are the Indigo Girls from Athens?
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, I think they are.
Sometimes if a band gets too big, it kind of blows up the scene to the point where everyone thinks, we're going to be the next REM or something. And so in some ways, the lack of that, I mean, there have been lots of great bands. Well, REO Speedwagon came from Champagne, right?
That's right, yeah.
People don't think of them as a Champagne band. And so I think it's just that it has that vital atmosphere, but in some ways, because no one's become sort of specifically identified with the town, that it's been able to rejuvenate and continue to have that real vitality.
But wait a minute, there are others. So this town does not only spawn like bands and a music scene. There's so many other fantastic things about what happens around the university too, you know. So then that's why, you know, there's all the computer science stuff that goes on here. And everything else. It's a fantastic town. So, and that's why I'm like really proud of the Pygmalion Festival, you know, because Seth highlights not only music, but there's literary fest now and there's tech and all that stuff. And I think that maybe, you know, that's I think that's the most fantastic thing about the Pygmalion Festival. Sorry to
is it the Pygmalion Festival? Is that what has finally, after 8 or 9 years, you guys were like, okay, if we're going to come back together, we're going to do this and play for Pygmalion Festival?
I think it was a combination of things.
We've been invited a couple of times, and it's not. The kids are too young yet, you know, but this year.
It all kind of just fell together where it was like, oh, Pygmalion, the 25th anniversary of the record, and we were all starting to have some breathing room again in our lives a little bit. Not a lot, but a little bit, you know, and so it was like, oh, it all kind of fell together into place.
So that's the 25th anniversary of Daisy Chain Reaction. We're speaking to Rick Valentin and Rose Marshak of Poster Children. Let's take a listen to, I thought we could listen to If You See K, which is off the 1991 record.
If we
Daisy
can.
Chan. Yeah, let's listen to it.
We'll be right back.
That's If You See K off the 1991 record Daisy Chain Reaction. The band is Poster Children. They're back together. They're reunited for the first time in about 9 years. Two of the band members, Rick Valentin and Rose Marshak, are in studio with me. Tell our audience, you know, you're both professors at Illinois State University. You're married. You guys have kids. How do your kids feel about this shit? How do the kids feel about, hey, mom and dad are going to be, or have they seen you play?
Our oldest has. I don't know if our youngest has seen us play.
I don't think he's seen us.
Yeah, no, because he's seven and we haven't played together. Yeah. So I don't know, even know if he saw us rehearse. I guess he heard a little bit of it the other day.
His second grade classroom, their theme is rock stars and rock bands.
So their parents are actually rock stars.
Yeah, but
everybody's
a rock star. So he comes home and he's a member of the band and we have to sign something because he did good.
The tour manager has given him, I can't remember. It's the theme of his whole class is based around
signed,
rock and roll.
Signed the band manager. You know, everything is signed from his teacher who's the band manager. So it's a little too close to home. So,
well, have you talked to them about your experience touring and all of that?
Not yet. So he came home and Alex Fisher, who's going to be helping us, who's going to be playing tonight, said to him, did you tell your teacher that your parents are rock stars? And he said, oh, yes, I did. And I'm like,
did she believe him?
Well, everybody's a rock star. Every time you do something good, you're a rock star. Right?
We had a whole conversation about it. It's a very strange thing, you know, thinking about when we started out, that idea. Well, and actually, because we're kind of from a punk rock, indie rock background, rockstar was actually kind of a derogatory
right,
term.
Right, I know, pejorative, right?
Thing.
You didn't want to be a rock star.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that kind of our whole scene was about rejecting that. And so now it's very strange that it's gotten to a point where it's just kind of this generic thing. It's not even controversial or anything like that. It's just this kind of fun label.
It's nice word that makes people feel good about themselves.
Exactly.
Which is a little bit different than you guys thought. Yeah. Are your kids picking up instruments? Are they playing? You said one of your children plays the violin.
Both of them play violin. They started when they were four. I know it seems like a punk rock band. You know, we'd be buying them pointy little guitars and stuff. But no, they're starting just like I did classically. And I feel like that's really important to instill that type of
is
music
that how you
background.
Did you start with classical music background?
Yeah, I did. Although you didn't, right?
I didn't. No, not at all. I'm kind of a classic rock and roll kind of
yeah. But
history.
You played a clarinet and you played stuff too.
Saxophone. Yeah, please. Same I did not
thing.
Play the clarinet.
String.
So
I'm a violinist.
Are you guys?
So.
What can everyone expect from tonight? Are you guys ready to? Everybody ready to? I don't want to say rock again, right?
Yeah.
Because I don't want to.
Lots of saxophone and violin. No. Yeah. It is good. I mean, even though we're getting on in years, no. It's actually quite loud and still rocking, and our drummer is younger than us, and really honestly that's the most important part. As long as the drummer can keep up, the guitar player, the bass players, the singers, you know, that's a little easier. And so
we're gonna jump around on stage like crazy people. I mean that's what we
and are your children gonna be there too?
I don't know if they'll notice that we're doing that because they may have little, you know, phones.
Or
to
they
look
might be
at
the maker table, right? They're going to have
true.
All sorts
yeah,
of computer
fest.
Stuff and everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's
yeah.
the thing is that, yeah. that they're
oh,
interested
mommy
in
and
lots
daddy
of things.
Are yelling and playing music again.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming from Bloomington to join us here in studio in Urbana. Rick Valentin, Rose Marshak, Poster Children. I thought we would end on a song from your 1995 album, Junior Citizen. We played a little bit to start, but this is He's My Star.
I am on the beach, looking for the thief that stole my heart from under me. Let it drift to sea, swimming too far out. I am almost drowned, no hope of being found. I've saved when a familiar face comes crashing. We'll be right back. guest star. Before he learned to swim, a voice would come to him on night rides. Faceless William elsewhere, known as Mark, and the father of Benjamin.
Stay tuned. This is an encore edition of The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. This is a special rebroadcast of a previous episode.
I'm going to raise hell until I reach heaven's door. You're going to have to forgive me, yeah. I'm going to raise hell until I reach heaven's door.
As you can hear, the jazz, hip-hop, and gospel influences from musician Sir the Baptist. The Chicago native caught a lot of people's attention at this year's Lollapalooza when at one point he performed from inside a coffin and asked the crowd, "Would you care if it was me?" The set may have been unique to most people watching, but for those familiar with Sir the Baptist, messages like that are nothing out of the ordinary. He's on the line with us now to talk about his art, his spiritual upbringing, and how he's using that to create music people are rallying around. Hey, Sir, welcome to The 21st. Thanks for being with us.
I'm glad to be here.
You know, after your Lala set, you explained that as an artist contributing to culture, you feel like you need to go to these extremes to get people talking. When did you start to form that kind of mindset when it comes to your music?
Well, you know, I always knew if I did music again, as I did it, I always grew up in music. But I knew that if I did it again and did it and gave it my all, that I would have to add a piece to it that I learned while working at Leo Burnett and understanding marketing from a different point of view. I wanted to put marketing with music and pair it in a way that could really connect to the human person, you know?
Yeah, and you mentioned Leo Burnett. Obviously, one of the biggest advertising agencies out there. You were writing jingles, and you worked on pretty big campaigns like McDonald's, right?
Right, exactly.
And at what point did you decide to make the transition into music full-time?
I think after I did a few things. One thing specifically, I helped McDonald's put a digital jukebox in every McDonald's via the Wi-Fi. I did this with a few other organizations. And when I put artists on the Wi-Fi and on the jukebox, it got 3, 4, 6 million downloads. And I just, you know what? I need to do this myself. So I got up and I said, hey, listen, I want to take the chance. And Ira and Tyler, who was one of my colleagues at that point, you know, really pushed me and said, hey, you know, go ahead and do it.
Let's play a little bit of your music to give people a chance to hear what it is. I'm going to play, this is Raise Hell. By the way, the album's called Preacher's Kid, PK Preacher's Kid. Let's take a listen to it.
Good luck. Mama say she gonna lose me. She pray the angels out on duty. Preacher can't even rebuke me. No, mama. Born a sinner and I'm bound to sin again tonight. You gon' have to forgive me, yeah. I'ma raise hell until I reach heaven's door. You gon' have to forgive me, yeah. I'ma raise hell until I reach heaven's door. Hey, yeah. I'd have been to the water, I'd have been baptized. Now I need new water, sipping on that new wine. I know what's best for me, sorta. I want heaven when I die, but there's this one thing that I can't seem to change. It's my bad habit, you 9 to 5, and I've been there trapping, worried, even nerd strap. We call that Inspector Gadget. When those ends meet, that's magic in your blood. That's that magic you've been living just to keep up. But tonight we about to turn the fuck up. Mama say she gonna lose me.
Yeah, she prayed to angels out on duty. Preacher can't even rebuke me. Yeah. Born a sinner and I'm about to sin again tonight. You gon' have to forgive me. I'ma raise hell until I reach heaven's door. You gon' have to forgive me. I'ma raise hell until I reach heaven's door. Good girls, bad girls, vagrants in those vagabonds. Homie called a few thotties, skip body green everywhere like Don Juan. Big group in like Don Juan. Diamonds in my cup like Don Juan. Church turned up like Don Juan. We all addicted, what you want? That bad habit, you 9 to 5. And I've been that trapping, even kids got power rings. VR troopers when they strapping. Turn 32, then that's that magic. That's that dummy magic. Thank the good Lord for the good luck. Cause tonight we're about to turn up. Mama say she gonna lose me, yeah. She pray the angels out on duty, yeah. Preacher can't even rebuke me, yeah. I'm a sinner, but I'm about to sin a fool. You're gonna have to forgive me. I'ma raise hell until I reach heaven's door. You're gonna have to forgive me. I'ma raise hell until I reach it, oh yeah. Oh, hey. Hey. Squaw.
Yeah. I just wanna dance.
She didn't come to hear me preach. She just wanna dance, huh? She didn't come to hear me preach. She just wanna dance, huh? She don't wanna hear me preach. She just wanna dance, huh? She didn't wanna...
That's Raise Hell. It's from the debut album PK Preacher's Kid from Chicago-based musician, Chicago native Sir the Baptist. So it gives people kind of a sense of all the influences that are in your music. And we should talk about your name, Sir the Baptist. That comes from your dad. Can you explain a little bit of your upbringing and how much church has played a role in your music? You can hear it there, obviously.
Yeah. I grew up in Brownsville, and my dad was a Baptist preacher. And growing up there, you really learn a lot about musicianship, because most of the great musicians of our time has come from gospel music and church. So, I got my first opportunity to perform and everything like that in a choir. And I just knew if I went to do music in a more, you know, professional way, that I would still want to incorporate that piece. You know, so many guys come from the church and they try to, you know, instantly become cool, you know, or do something that would be the popular norm. I wanted to stick to my guns and knowing that that I'm a preacher's kid, I'm a church boy.
Yeah. Well, and you even have the hashtag follow the robe. How important is it to have sort of not just your upbringing, but your dad's legacy? How much do you think that gets incorporated into your performance now as a musician?
Oh, yeah, a lot. Because I still look up to him as if he was, you know, a superhero. You know, he died when I was 11, but he still influenced my music and the way I perform it day to day. You know, that robe is a throwback to what my dad would wear and remind me of, you know, the moments we had in church.
Do you remember his preaching?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And
absolutely.
Yeah.
And family has a lot of tapes and everything, you know?
Yeah, I wonder how much you think that has also now part of your music. Obviously, there's a activism and there's a message behind your music. I mean, do you sort of think of your music as your way of getting your word out?
Exactly.
Would you say, though, I wonder, would you say that your music, I don't know if you would call it religious. Would you call it spiritual? Do you think there's a difference?
I think it's life music, because when we go to separate our life or our day to day or our love or our romance or emotional, when we separate that from spirituality, we sort of compartmentalize our lives, you know. So I think the best thing to say is that it's just life music. It has a little bit of spirituality. It has a little bit of your grandma in there. It has a little bit of my grandma. You know, you have all of these pieces in there. And just a day-to-day, a day in the life of a preacher's kid.
Well, and I'm thinking of particular of your song, Wake Up, right? Because there's a lot in there. There's a lot about speaking to what's going on right now, not just in Chicago, but across the country. You know, some people have said, you know, have talked about how much your music is reflective of and part of the Black Lives Matter movement. For you, when you're thinking about, I'm thinking about the lyrics in Wake Up, what was part of your process of writing that?
Well, I always try to give a balanced opinion to anything, you know. Well, the reason why I wrote Wake Up like that is because while we can complain about all the other things that go on in my community, I wanted my people to wake up and understand that we're also killing each other, you know. And while there's not a conversation for others to have on our behalf, it's a conversation that families should have. You know, those family talks that you don't necessarily invite the neighborhood into, but you have that conversation and you talk about the tough things. And for that second, it was, you know, Wake Up is a tough conversation between me and my community abroad, you know, that's dealing with this problem.
And that said, how is it now going out and performing big songs, not just Wake Up, but I'm thinking Raise Hell on big stages and national TV, whether it's Late Night or Lala? What kind of reception are you getting?
That's crazy. I'm getting people don't know how to feel, you know?
Right. Well, like, they don't know how to. Is it one of those things where people also want to categorize you and they feel like they can't figure out where you belong?
Right, right. They can't put me there because while many would love to put me in gospel or many would love to put me in hip hop, it's kind of hard to put me in either one because I carry this duality all the time. And this is what I grew up under. You know, I was raised in the 90s around, you know, the projects in Chicago. But my dad's church was in between, you know, five projects. So it gives me a perspective of part hip hop and part gospel, and I'm always going to teeter that line. I'm not going to say the things that gospel would want me to say, but I'm going to say a little some things that's deeper than just your girlfriend and your chain that you would probably hear in hip hop.
Right. Yeah. And I think you probably have too many bad words to be in gospel music, right?
Right.
So
exactly.
do you ever have conflicting feelings about whether to focus on the music or focus on your message? Or for you, are those just so deeply entwined that you don't really differentiate between them?
Wow, that's a beautiful question. You know, I spent so much time making sure that blend, neither one goes unfed. It's like two kids and you don't want to call neither one your favorite, you know. I'm in love with mission. I wrote my eulogy when I was like 14, and it was because I wanted to plan what mattered to me the most. And on the phone, standing here in Bronzeville, I'll tell you, I'm mostly moved by mission. And the reason why I do music is because mission moves me. I have no need to do music if the world was just perfect. I would just sing about, you know, things being perfect. But mission, really, I write every line hoping to reach someone. My music is basically an open letter, you know, and it's mostly mission. So I would say mission guides my pen when I'm writing music.
That said, as you said, you're in Bronzeville. It's September 2nd, so we're coming off of August numbers of violence in Chicago. You know, this is really looking like this is going to be a really bad year for the numbers and the amount of violence of people being killed by shootings in Chicago. I mean, is that affecting what you're writing now? Is that affecting what you're thinking about as you're thinking about that message?
Honestly, yeah. Right now, I'm really dealing with that. You know, I was just in New York for Afropunk and a bunch of meetings and stuff like that. And I can't lie, I was a little nervous to come home because Bronzeville is Southside, you know. But I knew that I need to come home because I need to write more and I need to find what the problem is and talk to my people. I'm spending a lot of time studying right now, a lot of books, reading. I'm trying to dig more deeply into the shootings of what's going on to see what's really behind this. it almost feels unreal. You know, a lot of people don't know why they're getting shot or who's shooting them, or some people haven't aggregated or, you know, or caused any problems with anyone, and they're getting shot. So it's almost unreal. It's scary.
Yeah, I bet it is. Let me ask you really quickly, you have an organization called DeedPen. What's the idea behind that?
So DeedPen is an organization I started maybe 3 years ago and couldn't really get to it like I wanted to because I was doing music, but I knew I wanted it to work. I'm working with Allison Welkin. She's a nurse from Northwestern Hospital, and she also caters to all the fans in each festival, handing out care packages that has bars, fruit bars, and water and vitamin C and
so,
stuff like that.
Sorry, we're just about out of time, but is the idea that people can kind of post good things that they're doing and share that in the world?
Exactly.
All right,
exactly.
Cool. Thanks for that. Sir the Baptist, let's go out. I want to thank everybody. We're going to wrap up the show today. Say thanks to everybody for a great week. Thank you to Sir the Baptist. His debut album is PK, Preacher's Son. This is What We Got.
If I could be anything, I wanna be the little engine in the hood, yeah. If I could show you anything,
yes, sir,
I'll show you that our hood was once so good. See this propaganda, got my youngins throwing tantrums, packing bags, packing chimneys, and I ain't really talking Santa. We rarely see white beards, they usually die before 15. World star dying over what they favorite rapper wore clean.
Here we
see,
go.
I know we ain't got much. Let's go for it, what we got. Whether it's a whip or the bus, cause let's go for it, what we got. If we're faithful over a few things, good Lord, we give you much. Say, this is what we got. This what we got. Yeah, this what we got. Grab for what we got. See, Mama, I want a million. She say, well, maybe you should save up your pennies. I say, nah, I see Bentleys riding in something pretty. She say, maybe you should name your hoopty Bentley. I'm doing donuts and a lemon on a spare. Yeah, trapping for what I ain't got. Grateful and down to share. Cause it ain't no fun if the homies can't come. So we pack like sardines, Bishop Ford, just chasing dreams. Said I know it ain't got much.
Ain't got much.
Stay tuned to this encore edition of The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. This is an encore edition of The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo.
Predecir el comportamiento de una persona basada en su raza o nivel social. Estereotipo.
That is the music of Black Violin. They're a group challenging people's thoughts on everything from musical genres to social stereotypes. On Fridays, we like to speak to artists from Illinois, or in this case, just passing through. They're playing this Monday in the Chicago suburbs in Naperville, Illinois. We're joined in studio now by the South Florida duo that is Black Violin, Kev Marcus and Will Baptiste. Hey, guys. Thanks for being with me.
Hey, what's up? How you doing?
Thank you for having us.
When we heard just a little bit of your music there, I think lots of people have stereotypes about what classical music is or isn't. They always think it needs to be in a fancy opera house or in a symphony hall. Are people most excited? I wonder when people see you guys, the venues that you play in, do you think they, how do they react?
At first they're coming there because they hear, they see the word Black Violin, so they're like, that looks interesting. I wonder how that sounds. So they come in, they don't know what to expect, and they're completely blown away just because the idea of it, you know what I mean? Hip hop, classical, and the way that we, you know, we kind of put the two together, it's very clean and a very, you know, it lends itself to just different types of people being in the same room, experiencing music at the same time, but maybe in a different way.
You know? Kev, how did you guys get to the space of hip-hop classic? And it is, I think it is a really clean mix of the way that you all synthesize your music. How did you guys get to this place?
Well, you know, we grew up in Fort Lauderdale, so, we lived in the hood and just went to a public performing arts high school, and every day second period we had orchestra class, so we took advantage of it and we, you know, practiced our violins and our violas and, you know, studied and, you know, took music theory and did all the things that, you know, most classical musicians do. But after we left second period, we put our headphones on, we was listening to Wu-Tang or Biggie or Nas or Jay-Z, because that's the environment we grew up in. So, you know, we had all these kinds of success happening with the violin and the viola, and we end up getting full scholarships to college and, you know, all these accolades, you know, growing up playing it. But at the same time, we was always hip hop. So, like, you know, for us blending the two together, you know, it's very natural for us. But the thing that we focus on in our music is making sure that we are extremely classical and making sure that we are extremely hip hop, and doing it at the same time with the same doses, so that two people sitting next to each other in a concert, one could have their eyes closed and just mesmerized by the strings, and then sitting right next to that person would be somebody just nodding their head uncontrollably at the hip hop bounce of it. And that's the beauty of it, you know, it's just about the mixture of it and not mixing either side too heavily, because then you lose the pure classical person, or you lose the person that just wakes up and listens to Drake all day. You know, we want to get all of them, and we want all of them to come to our concert and have a unique experience and have something that they share in common.
Well, how do you market that, right? Because I think that's a really tough thing. And how have you guys managed to maintain this career as you all are performing all over the U.S.? Because that is a really unusual space to be in. And I think in the industry, it's really hard when you're not in a specific genre to be in a space of, hey, I want to market this, because it's all about, well, what group are we trying to target?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny you say that, because that's the conversation, because we're with Universal Classic, their classical division label, and that's the thing with any music label, they want to put you in a box, they want to tell you, listen, what's your demographic? And with us, we don't have a demographic, we don't have a box, you know what I'm saying? Everyone appreciates our music. So, you know, a way to market is just, you know, performing. You know, if you see it, you believe it, you know. And we were doing this before Twitter or any social media network. We were doing this before then. So, you know, we had to literally, you know, perform in the clubs. And if you see us, then you'll follow us on the website, or you'll come to our show if we're in a town near you. So that's our way. And that's how we've been doing it for years, because once you see us perform, you'll never forget it. You know what I mean? Like, it may be 10 years before you see us perform again, but you'll never forget that one time you've seen us perform, because it's something that you've never experienced before. You know what I mean? So that's what we do. That's our bread and butter. That's why we tour year round every year, because as much as YouTube helps and all these different networks and outlets, but ultimately when you come to a Black Violin show, that's the way we get you, you know?
All right, well, now you guys have set it up. Now you have to perform. So what are you going to play for us now?
We're going to play a song titled Stereotypes. That's the name of our album. And, Stereotypes. There we go.
Black Violin. That is an acoustic performance off of their album Stereotypes. They're in studio with us at Studio F. They are going to be performing this Monday in suburban Naperville, out in the Chicago suburbs, if you can catch them. We have a chance to talk to them now. And as you guys are playing that, that's the acoustic version. Your produced version has, you know, there's a lot more of the hip hop that's in there. And I'm thinking, as I was thinking about that, when you're writing your music, because you're thinking about how it's fitting into both the classical genre as well as hip hop, does that influence how fast the classical portion of it is? Does that influence the pace of it?
The pace helps, you know what I mean? Because it's something that, you know, it's driving is high, the energy is there. But we try not to really necessarily think of it. We don't necessarily go in the studio and think, how do we... It's something that really naturally comes together, and it's naturally something that we do naturally, you know what I mean? Because it's organic. We're hip hop before we were classical. So for us, you know, if you work with a producer, he puts on a beat, and whatever comes out is typically what goes on to the in the music, you know what I mean? And a lot of times it has a lot of pace, has a lot of moving. And classical is typically, you know, very lush and beautiful. And you hear stuff like that as well. I mean, obviously we'll have a lot of stuff like that on our album. But definitely pace in terms of the energy, in terms of just if you come to our show, you know, the beat is moving and we're moving with the beat. But at the same time, if we're playing like a ballad type of song, you know, we're going to play a little slower and a slower pace, you know. So it's all about really showcasing just that mix, you know what I mean? Like that mix of hip hop and just, you know, classical, but also everything else in between. If you listen to our music, I mean, there's a lot of different things in there. There's funk, there's jazz, there's bebop, and there's, you know, if you listen a little hard, you might hear a little country in there, you know what I mean? So there's a lot of different elements in our music, so.
And when I think about that, when you guys are performing, I know earlier this month you played a few shows to some kids here in Urbana. How did they react?
You mean the mosh pit? Like they were, it was a mosh pit at the kids show in Urbana. Literally, like they all just came to the front of the stage and they're just jumping up and down and dancing, you know, because it's very much like a rock concert, except instead of guitars or violins involved, you know? And the best part of it is just seeing all of their faces, you know, and then not only that, you're seeing them jumping up and down and the teachers are in it too. Like the teachers and the chaperones are like in it and they're dancing with the kids, and you know, and in what way do you ever see that, you know? So that's great. And then, you know, once we get them and like once we have them in our hand, then we give them this simple message, you know. It's simple. I'll say, give my spiel, I'll say, have you ever seen a violin concert like this? And all of them say no. And then I say, well, you know, the violin's been great, got full scholarship to college, we performed for President Obama, played all over the world with this violin, but the true point of our show is to get everyone to think outside the box and to break stereotypes. Doesn't matter how cool or uncool you thought this violin was, you can make it your own. And if you want to be a violinist, that's great. But if you want to be a doctor, a lawyer, scientist, you want to be the next LeBron James, whatever you want to do, just make sure that you are doing it in a way that no one has ever attempted. And that is the stronger, broader message. I mean, it's one thing to say, hey, you know, go get a violin and practice as much as possible. But it's another thing to say, like, whatever it is that you love to do, just do that in a way that no one else has thought of it. Violins have been around hundreds of years. We said, let's throw some 808 beats on and put some Jordans and fitted caps while we play it and let's see what happens. And it works for us, you know? This is just our vehicle for thinking differently. So if we can give any kid or anyone that's watching some of that kind of inspiration, then our job is done.
Kev, there's a line in Stereotypes, the voiceover in the produced version, where you say, I'm completely crushing people's impressions of what a violin can do and also what a black man is capable of. Mm-hmm. And I wonder for you, especially as we think about so much of this space that we are in this country right now, of perceptions of black men, I wonder for you, I wonder how you feel like what you guys are doing is helping maybe change a little bit of the conversation.
I think it's really important, you know, for what we do to change the conversation because, you know, with us, you know, we step on stage and, you know, certain people in certain markets that we perform in, you know, they think of a black man in a certain way or they think of a violin in a certain way. When I was growing up, I thought a violin was really kind of corny, you know, really ballerina music. That's what I thought it was when I was growing up, you know. I'm plenty of kids, I'm sure, think that as well. And then as far as a black man, you know, I mean, I don't know many other black violin players, and I'm a black violin player. So, I mean, there's definitely...
There's you two.
There's
you
us two. I mean, we have tons of friends that do it as well. So, you know, shouts out to everybody that's listening that, you know, that's a black man or woman playing. But, you know, we don't see that often. So it's like for us, we feel like when we step on stage, it's literally kind of, it changes the person's conversation in their head of when they see a black man walking up to them, or changes their conversation of like, you know, hey, I got this classical concert this weekend. You want to come? Like, yeah, I kind of do want to come now that I've heard it in a different way, you know? So, you know, we're just happy that we're able to, you know, in a musical and cultural sense, continue the conversation of, you know, not judging a book by its cover and just freeing your mind into just being able to, you know, break stereotypes in anything that you choose to do.
That's Kev Marcus. Will Baptiste is also part of the group Black Violin. Their album is called Stereotypes. You guys can take us out with one last. What are you guys going to play for us?
I'll play a cover for you guys.
All right.
This one is at Took a Pill in Ibiza, Mike Posner. So...
Thanks. That does it for this special encore edition of The 21st. Thanks for listening. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app. Search for The 21st. We're also available on iTunes and Android. If you want to send us an email, leave us a voicemail, follow us on social media, all you have to remember is our website, 21stshow.org. We're produced by Hal Delahi, Christine Herman, and Sean Newman. Technical direction comes from Jason Croft with help from Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our executive editor. Thanks to Joe Yoon and Nick Vance from the University of Illinois' Social Media Analytics Lab for their research help. And special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening.